are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I'm not going to mock your entire existence. But it's prospects or suspect till proven otherwise.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Well, first thing, I think I would place a big red asterisk around the word hype.
I would like to rotate my soapboxes from year to year.
Mm.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Friends with Fantasy Benefits concept podcast, which we do on Mondays, which is something I certainly look forward to every single week. Fortunately for us, we have our expert of all experts, Justin Mason, with us today, as well as Andrew Dewhurst. Justin, how are you doing today?
I'm a little tired, but I'm glad to be back on the concept pod. It's one of my favorite podcasts to come on because we typically argue about things, and I enjoy arguing, and I think today will be no different.
Yeah, today is setting itself up quite nicely for that, isn't it? And Dr. Dewhurst, how are you today?
I'm doing all right. A little tired as well, but probably not Justin Mason level tired.
And the injury front has offered some stretching of your medical analysis recently, hasn't it? Is that what they were talking about with Michael Conforto's injury and trying to deep dive into those statistics? I see you as part of that today.
Yeah, trying to understand like what happens when like Michael Conforto, when he separated his shoulder last year, also tore one of the muscles. So like trying to understand what the rehab is for that and what, you know, what, how that might affect him. And I think I can give a nice shout out to your favorite University of Wisconsin, Chuck, because that's where I found much of the information on the rehab.
Yeah, we're leaders and stuff like that, surprisingly enough. It's Madison fights the Harvards and the MITs of the world in certain areas, and medical field is definitely one of them. Okay, well, we have I would like to frame the concept today, but I will do that after we touch base with an email that we received. Andrew, why don't you set us up for our debate about exactly how to evaluate these statistics?
Sure. The question that came in is, my league is a 14-team, 6x6 head-to-head categories league, adding quality starts and on-base plus slugging. We have 12 players and 15 prospects. With quality start... So the question is twofold. One, with quality starts and wins as their own category, do you see any viability for drafting non-save middle relievers such as Miller, Green, Peacock, or will you only target closers who get saves? My worry is that these middle relievers really hurt you since there's 0% chance that they get a quality start, slim chance for wins effectively hurting you in two categories, plus quality starts to an extent. Also, is punting saves going... and going with only starting pitchers a viable strategy in this format? Are the members try it? I usually lock down a few closers each year. And then the second question is just curious on some deeper players who should be more valued in on-base plus slugging leagues. So I'll jump back to question one, or the first half of question one. Does it make sense to punt strong middle relief guys such as Miller, Green, Peacock, when you're using quality starts and wins as their own category in a head-to-head categories league? Chuck, I'll let you start with this.
Well, the first thing that I noticed when I saw the question is that Andrew Miller is different than those other two relievers. You know, I think it's very unlikely that Brad Peacock gets any saves this year. And I think it's pretty unlikely that Chad Green gets saves this year, whereas Andrew Miller is one injury away from being an elite closer. So I'm sort of nitpicking the question there, but his general feeling is what I agree with, that I think all but the all but the handcuff closer style middle reliever I would be afraid to draft in a league like this. The extra category with the quality starts just scares me away from that too much. I wonder if you agree, Justin.
You know, I think it obviously devalues guys who are middle relievers and don't get saves, but I definitely would not go with a punting saves and only starting pitcher strategy. I don't mind the idea of necessarily punting saves, but I don't think you can go all starting pitchers. I mean, ERA and WHIP are still two categories in this, and the chances that you're going to be able to put together a 14-team league, that you're going to be able to put together a staff that can compete in those two ratio categories without having some sort of relievers on your team is pretty foolhardy. You're going to have to just absolutely nail your lower-end pitchers, which, I mean, is possible theoretically, but getting guys like Chris Devensky, getting guys like Andrew Miller, getting some of these kind of middle relief options, they help stabilize those ratios. And in an era in which ratios are harder and harder to stabilize because starting pitchers are going fewer innings and getting blown up on more occasions, especially with a juiced ball, I think you need to have middle relievers, if not closers, to help stabilize those ratios. If you're going to punt the saves, I don't have a problem with that. I'm totally fine with punting categories. I talk about punting average all the time. You need middle relievers to help stabilize those ratios, but they should come at a cheaper cost. If they're going at the same price as they would in a traditional 5x5 league, then I would look for cheaper options. There's plenty of middle relievers out there that are, do a fantastic job. Yusmer Petit is a guy that I talked about that got a lot of innings last year with amazing ratios. And is moved to an even better stadium than he was in last season. So just kind of find those guys that can help stabilize those ratios.
Yeah, and I think I'm in the same place as you, Justin. So I mean, I play in a similar style league, only I have like, it's a 12x12 category, head-to-head categories. So we're counting just about everything. And I still look for those middle relievers because, I mean, you can't discount the effect of the quality innings that they provide with WHIP, ERA, and especially if you're getting high strikeout guys. I mean, Yusmer Petit being a perfect example, like he struck out more than 100 guys last year. You take that number and put it against some of your closers, those guys are really valuable. And often, I think in these style leagues, most people want to devalue them, so you can get them near the end of your draft for next to nothing while everyone's drafting, you know, some of the closers in the, you know, third through 10th rounds.
I do think this is one of the fun things about being in a league like this is that you can take in the information and try different strategies around these extra categories, meaning if you think that Brad Peacock is going to start regularly this year, I'm a little worried about all the pitching depth in that organization for that to happen. And I don't like the stretch of time where they send him down to stretch him out to be a starter or, issues like that that can come up. And an emergency starter, they might not choose to use Peacock if it falls right for somebody else in the organization. Whereas Andrew Miller is a guy where, like has been mentioned before, if Cody Allen goes down, they've already shown that that's the guy that they'll use in save situations. And he's certainly more than capable of getting righties and lefties out. So I think, for me, I would use this as an opportunity to delve through each individual middle reliever and hedge my bets, meaning I want to protect these ratios like Justin and Andrew are talking about, but I also want the chance that their role grows into more than somebody just to do that within my roster. So we're not very far different off on that part of the question. Where else are we going with this here, Andrew? What do you got for
us? The second half of the question is, any thoughts on some deeper players who would be who should be valued more in OPS leagues?
Justin, why don't you take this first while I delve into this a little bit?
Let's see. I had a list of guys, and I'm trying to figure out where I put it. There it is. Okay, so I mean, it's going to be a lot of the same guys that you necessarily would expect. Guys that get bumps up. I just kind of sorted my projections by OPS, you know, guys that maybe are a little higher up than are in my traditional rankings. Guys like Rhys Hoskins gets a nice little bump. Guys like Aaron Judge get a nice little bump. Guys that walk and have power obviously are going to get nice little bumps. Joey Gallo, a guy I really love in an OPS league. So, I'm not a big fan of adding OPS to the league, so this isn't a format I would necessarily play. But you're obviously looking for guys who've got power and can walk. So those three true outcome guys that maybe some people would avoid outside of your OBP formats become a lot more valuable. So Gallo, even a guy like Michael Conforto, if he's healthy at some point, would get a nice little bump. Guys like I like Jose Abreu in a formula like this. Nelson Cruz, Chuck's buddy, gets a nice little bump. So, guys who've got OPSs above 850 are definitely guys I'd be looking to try to grab early on in these drafts and target. And you just want to stay away from the guys who either don't walk at all or don't have power. You know, a guy like Jock Peterson is one of those guys that gets a nice little bump. You know, 830 OPS more than likely next season, even though, he struggles with contact. So if he can hit you 25 home runs and an 830 OPS, that'd be a nice little boost, and he probably will go fairly cheaply in most leagues.
Well, I would like to add a couple names to the convo here. One is Carlos Santana, who, mm-hmm. of course, goes really high in a lot of OBP leagues. And the other one is Todd Frazier, whose walk rate was pretty crazy good last year. And he's a guy that I think could seriously rebound in BABIP. He's been known to run really hot to start the season. And if he starts to fall off, maybe you wouldn't have invested so much. This is just an opportunity for me to mention that in a lot of leagues like this, maybe some of the owners aren't really ready for the format. So you really want to look for value, exactly how we're sort of searching for it right now. Search for players who walked a lot last year that are going relatively late in regular drafts, and think to yourself, well, if people are using the regular ADP and what have you, then all of a sudden you can really find yourself into a nice buying opportunity for it. Andrew, what did you think about this part of the question?
Yeah, I mean, I grabbed a couple of guys who are in the 200 to 300 range that look like they're nice OBP values. The first one is Hanley Ramirez. He's projected based on Steamer's projections as the 65th highest OBP. He's had a nice spring training so far, and I think he's going around an ADP, a normal ADP of about 300. And yeah, I think it's really important that when you look at these ADPs, that these ADPs are built on 5x5, not anything outside of that. So it does get to be, there's some room to take advantage on guys who excel in spots that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily find in a 5x5. The other guy is Yuli Gurriel. He's 54th highest in projected OBP. And you're going to get him at a far, you're getting him a lot later than you would have normally because of the hand injury, because it looks like he's going to miss 6 to 8 weeks with that hammock bone surgery. So those are a couple guys that I would keep an eye out for late in that draft, because they might provide you a lot of value in that category. And with these types of categories with OBP, I assume you're probably also keeping things that make up those categories, like home runs. So there's a little
bit. Is it OBP or it's OPS, right?
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah. It's OPS. Sorry. I wrote it down wrong in my notes, but it is definitely OPS.
So more guys that are going later. Chris Davis with a C. The Chris Davis with a K, I think, is better. He's been walking more than I think people kind of give him credit for. Sinchu Chu. Another guy who would offer some kind of sneaky good value. Dexter Fowler, obviously a strong OBP guy, but, even though he doesn't have a ton of power, he still puts up at almost 800 OPS. Jake Lamb, Jake Lamb's value is dropping a ton, but in a format like this, because he walks so much and does still have real power, he provides some pretty decent value. So if his value continues to drop in your traditional formats, and that falls in your league, that's definitely a guy. And one of my guys I really hate normally, but whenever you're talking about walking a lot, Brandon Belt walks a ton. So I mean, he's a guy that will probably only hit 20 home runs, if that, but still have, like, you know, an 840 OPS.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty thorough discussion with lots of good suggestions on what to do with OPS-style players. And I think it probably provided some good background for people on deeper players that we like in general. Because one thing about players who are good in OBP leagues is that they're generally really good players, and they are providing...
Except for Brandon Belt.
Yeah, except for Brandon Belt. But they are providing enough offensively that in real world baseball, they usually are going to accrue quite a bit of plate appearances, and that offers them upside in and of itself. So I think
Before we move on, just want to just mention to everybody that, you know, one, that email was from Garrett in Austin. Really, really appreciate it. If you have emails, even if they are kind of league specific, or you have, like, you know, kind of a weird league, you know, we can use it as fodder for the show. We'll try to. At worst, I will personally email you back myself if we're not going to use it on the show. You will. Every single person who emails friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com at least gets an email back from me. If not, we'll use it on the show. So definitely continue to send those emails in if you have things you want asked or answered from us. So.
Yeah, well, we provide plenty of questions already. I'm just kidding. Just giving ourselves a little bit of a hard time. All right, the concept for the week. Let's step into that. I have this theory that the league, as it gets younger and younger, we are losing track of how to value player progressions, how normal performance arcs are going to happen. And we're doing a very poor job of getting over prospect fatigue. We label a player before the player has come anywhere as close to fully developing. And I posed this concept as the concept of 24. And by doing so, I picked out some 24-year-old players, and I want to talk about if we've already labeled them, if we already have this theory about who these players are when they're only 24 years old, which is fairly preposterous in my mind. It's one of the advantages I have of being the old guy at FWFB, is that I remember when you didn't even consider a player to be called up until he was 26 or 27. Now we're calling up players when they're 21 or 22 years old, and we're giving up on them when they're 24 or 25, which to me is just mind-boggling. Now, I did a little off-the-cuff research. Of the top 25 players in ADP, over 25% of them were still struggling mightily until after they were 24. And I want to avoid the most trite examples here. Okay, the most trite examples are Josh Donaldson, who was not a major league regular until he was almost 28 years old. Jose Bautista, who was major league driftwood for 5 or 6 years before he adjusted his swing, and all of a sudden he became a borderline first round player. I'm going to avoid the most trite ones. I'm going to go to a player that's going to tie into a player we're going to discuss later in his own way, and that's Didi Gregorius. When Didi Gregorius was 23 years old, he hit 7 home runs and had no stolen bases in 103 games as a Diamondback. And everyone was certain that he was just an absolute zero offensively. That's what we thought of him. And now, you know, people are going to counter with saying, well, he's just a product of Yankee Stadium or what have you. Somehow or another, he hit almost 290 and hit 25 home runs. I mean, that is not a zero offensively. And now you're looking at a guy who's a top 12 shortstop in almost every format right now. Part of that's the Yankee lineup. I get it. And Didi Gregorius is not a great player. I get that as well. But when we write off players when they're really, really young in our head, I think it creates buying opportunities, and I want to discuss some of those buying opportunities today. And Justin is going to completely mock my entire approach to existence right now, which is okay. You go ahead, Justin.
You know, well, I'm not going to mock your entire existence. I actually, when I first read this, and I kind of mocked you in our little chat that we have set up for us before the podcast, I kind of misunderstood the question a little bit. So now that you've explained it, I'm a little bit on board with this. But here's the thing. There's an old saying, and I don't know where it originated from, but I use it all the time. And so I'm sorry if I'm not giving the correct person the correct credit. But it's prospects or suspect till proven otherwise. I think we've gotten into an age in which we've seen a lot of amazing prospects come up and be very, very good right away. And it has colored our glasses that we think that every good prospect is going to come up and be fantastic right away. Paul, my buddy Paul Spohr over at Sleeper in the Bus says all the time that prospect growth isn't linear. And that is very, very true. Sometimes people peak at different ages. They need more seasoning. They need less seasoning. Sometimes they peak and then they come back down a little bit. And sometimes guys just never reach the potential that we had for them. At the end of the day, when you're picking prospects and really when you're trying to project prospects, you're doing exactly that. It's a projection. The idea that they're going to actually achieve that is a crapshoot. You know, we don't know how guys are going to develop over time, and we don't know if guys are going to underperform or overperform. Do I think that lends to an era in fantasy in which maybe we do have some post-hype sleepers now that maybe we didn't have is heavily previously? I think it does. I think there are going to be guys that people forget about, that people don't talk about because they've gotten older. Do I think that's going to be easy to identify? No, I don't.
Well, I certainly agree with your counter points here as well. I want to mention one other thing. People have this tendency when they draft someone that's younger and you're drafting them in a sophomore year or maybe, you know, just barely into their junior year or what have you. They have this tendency to assume that if that guy doesn't hit, that that's what cost them their entire league, which I think is kind of funny because that what they're taking out of the equation is that older players fall off too. Okay? If you take Ozzie Albies over an older player, that older player still has a chance to fall off, and you don't know that you would have nailed it with that older player. But for whatever reason, people have this target mentality that if they take a young player and that player doesn't pan out, that costs them their entire league. Andrew, what do you feel about the concept today?
Well, first thing, I think I would place a big red asterisk around the word hype. So first, I think to be a post-hype sleeper, you had to have hype in the first place. And in some cases, I think we're just jumping at like, oh, this guy's getting called up. Let's go and grab him, which is a little bit different. But I mean, I liken this to a shell game, right? You give me three prospects and we'll put them in a row and we'll mix them all up and you open the shell and you might have the right one or you might not. I feel like it's probably, I mean, if you're right a third of the time, you're probably doing pretty well. And if you staked your entire team on getting like some amount of projected upside on a rookie or a sophomore player, then I think that's just maybe an issue in your own process, right? Like right now we've got the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational going on and we're tracking the ADPs on some of these guys and we see some crazy things happening. We see guys like Acuna going in the top 100 and like to say, you know, like it costs you, if it costs you the league, that's possible in this type of format because like what do you need to get from him at like 93 is going to be pretty significant. You're not going to have a lot of room for error where, you know, there's going to be players that are going to go 20 picks later that very well could like have a much higher percentage of providing you a better value. So I think we just need to be careful with players that are young because, yeah, development doesn't happen linearly for everyone. Injuries affect the way that guys develop. And there's a reason why, you know, Major League Baseball, each team has like four or five farm teams, and it's because a lot of players get drafted, a lot of players get signed because it's a craps game sometimes.
Well, I think you made a really important point there because what I didn't bake into the concept and maybe is part of what Justin was scoffing at, which I do. I offer Justin opportunity to scoff on a regular basis. what I wasn't sort of baking into my thought process is that you'll notice the players that I picked out for this are players that are going really, really deep. Like, I do not own a share of Ronald Acuña, and I would love to own him in anything that was a dynasty format. I get that part of it. But in this case, I still see, you know, like Acuña especially, or, you know, Willy Adames, or these players that are on teams that I don't think are going to be super competitive this year, I see their upside getting somewhat trumped by service time issues. And so those are important things to keep in mind in redrafts. You know, for another date, the big debate was going on about where to take Luis Castillo and if he's going dramatically too early in drafts because of his remarkable debut season last year. And these are definitely fascinating questions. But around this concept today, I do want to bake in the fact that I am looking for value, looking for people who I think have significant upside, have great chances at roles, and are going really, really deep in leagues. And the list that Andrew gave me also went along with it. And Justin Mason chose, you know, not to.
I'm coming up with the guys on the fly. So. Well,
if anyone's qualified to do that, sir, it's definitely you. So why don't we go one guy at a time, and we'll put Justin last, and we'll start with Andrew and go to me, and then you, Justin. Andrew, why don't you give us your first 24-year-old that you find to have interesting league value right now?
Are you on mute, Andrew?
I absolutely am on mute. I'll start with Alex Reyes. Former top pitching prospect as of last year, had Tommy John, and now we've seen his value drop significantly. I think he's going at the late, somewhere in the late 100s, early 200s in a lot of drafts. So I think he's a perfect example of post-hype sleeper. I mean, we've got countless number of players who have had Tommy John. I think part of the issue of why he's dropping is just role uncertainty and how the Cardinals are going to make use of him. But that being said, when you consider our previous conversation of how should we value strong middle relievers, I think Reyes is a good example of that, as a guy that who could get still give you some innings through the year, and then possibly be, you know, like a almost like a trade deadline type of gain at closer to the end of the year, should he, you know, move into a starting role and provide you some really valuable innings closer to the end of the year.
I think the deeper the roster, the more I like Reyes as an upside pick here. He certainly has upside to eventually grow back into being a starter, and the Cardinals are not as deep as they have been in that area. And he certainly has potential to end up the closer by the end of the year. And you mentioned role uncertainty. If you're drafting skill and skill alone, this is definitely your guy. The issue, I think, here is we also have to wonder if he's going to fully regain his control as early as we would like to help us as soon as we would like this season. What are your thoughts on Mr. Reyes in St. Louis, Justin?
I love him long term. I don't love him for this year. Coming off of Tommy John surgery, I just don't know that the Cardinals are going to want to push it too much with him. I think best case scenario is what you just said, Chuck, that they decide to put him as a closer. That back in that bullpen is pretty iffy, to say the least. There are guys that I very, very much like, but I really don't trust Mike Matheny to necessarily stick with a guy or pick the correct guy. So it's a hard bullpen to really figure out what's going to have happen. So I love Reyes long term. For this season, I just don't know that you're going to get the innings and quality innings that you need outside of, you know, if you're rostering middle relievers. And then I think you can get guys cheaper than he's going. So for that reason, I'm probably out on Alex Reyes.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a tough one to play. I think this is high risk, high reward. And I think anything where you have any keeper aspect, I think there's a severe buying opportunity. But anything that's a pure redraft, I also think there's the high risk of you getting 35 innings out of him this year if everything mm-hmm. goes wrong, which is kind of scary if he's not, those 35 innings aren't necessarily generating any significant categorical change in your fantasy team. So would you like to retort us there, Andrew?
Not necessarily. I mean, his ADP right now is 255 in that's NFBC ADP. So, I mean, at that point, I feel like there's a lot of, well, 250, maybe not 255. You're not quite up to speculation picks, but I think if he's still around in the 300-plus range, there's some value there to speculate on. And if you, I mean, I don't remember who said this, but it's very true. If you're not turning over the bottom 25% of your roster in a fantasy league, you're probably doing something wrong. So I'm happy to do that with guys that I'm drafting at that point in my process. So just a guy with some high upside that, you know, you pick up at the price and you drop, you know, if it doesn't go well.
Well, I also am going to use this opportunity. It's hard for me to think of myself as a local league guy, but I am in two local leagues, which I love getting together personally for the draft. You know, I think it's the Barf League that Justin's in, so he knows what I'm talking about drafting live like that. But the point being is that I think you will see a variance in some of those leagues where people are looking at last year's stats. I think you're going to see an even greater buying opportunity on a guy like Alex Reyes. He could fall significantly in those style leagues as well. My poster child for this, well, I guess it's their co-poster children between two of my three that I had mentioned, is Nick Williams. Nick Williams is 24 years old. He was expected to maybe grow more in the plate discipline area than he has, but I'm finding some real statistical oddities in Nick Williams. Nick Williams is going as the 69th outfielder off the board in ADP right now in NFBC. He's going after guys like Jose Martinez. Where is he going to play? Especially if Carpenter is as hurt as we fear he is right now. David Dahl, haven't we been there before? And David Peralta, if we're downgrading Souza because we don't know what role everyone's going to have in the outfield in Arizona, I think we should definitely be downgrading David Peralta. But I also want to point to the fact that not only who's going in front of him, but let's take a little closer look at his numbers from last year. 27 home runs and 99 RBIs between AAA and the bigs last year, you know, including 12 of those home runs were at the big league level in 83 games. I also, as a 23-year-old, that used to be something that was really impressive, and I know that that power doesn't matter as much as it used to, but I think when you get to this point in the draft, if you can get 20-plus home runs with a decent batting average, you're going to be in pretty good shape. Now, I also, the most curious thing I saw when I looked at his profile is his BABIP last year just jumps right off the page. Like, holy cow, he had a 375 BABIP. This is sets off the analytics alarms will go off for months when you see just that 375 in BABIP. But wait a second. His last nine stops in the minors, he had one BABIP under 341 with, you know, full season 391, full season 371. I think that his profile, while he does swing and miss a lot, he does strike out a lot, his walk rate is under 6%. How about just a track record of general success? And I think that there's ample opportunity for him to get plenty of at-bats in Philadelphia. So now you can debunk my theory, Justin. Let's start with you.
I think the issue you have with Nick Williams is, how much playing time is he going to get this year? You know, if the Phillies had not signed Carlos Santana and moved Rhys Hoskins into the outfield, Nick Williams would be in line for every day at bats. He's not going to be now, though. With that signing, puts him in a platoon situation with Aaron Altherr. And I mean, I like Altherr, so I mean, I almost think that Altherr could get more than just the shorthanded part of that platoon. So. I think the problem is I don't see any feasible way for him to get to 600 plate appearances or even 500 plate appearances. So I have a really hard time thinking he's going to get to 20-plus home runs. So there's some talent there. I wish he walked a little bit more. I wish he didn't strike out quite as much as he did or he does, but I could see him being a very valuable piece if there's an injury. And so I think where he's going is totally fine. It's worth the gamble because Aaron Alfaro has been injured in the past. It's not like guys like Odubel Herrera have been super healthy their entire career. You know, maybe they decide to give Carlos Santana more days off without a DH, and they can move Hoskins back into first base on occasion and give both Altair and Williams more at-bats that way. I just have a hard time believing he's going to get a full season of plate appearances, and so that limits his upside.
Yeah, I certainly can see that to an extent. I also would say, I mean, he is at least on the right side. He's on the right side of the platoon as far as being able to get more at-bats. And I happen to be I'm arguing prospect fatigue with prospect fatigue, so please mock me for this. But I have, like, I was first on the Altair train and first off the Altair train. So I've just sort of had it with all the toolsy stuff for Altair. And I think if Williams plays well, he can sort of push the hand to getting more than just the strong side of the platoon.
They also have guys coming up from the minors, too. I mean, this is not a team that is bare in the minor leagues. They could easily bring up a Dylan Cousins. If Cornelius Randolph plays really, really well, he could come up at some point. Roman Quinn's still in this organization. There's plenty of guys who could come up and be threats to Nick Williams' playing time.
Stop being so logical and probably right for just a second, would you?
Even say that they're stacking these outfielders like cordwood.
No, that would never be said. Certainly not on this podcast. The point being is that while that is true about the, if I was going to counterpoint you, I would say, look, he did hit almost 280 with 12 home runs in 83 games. So leapfrogging prospects over the top of him not only switches the service time, but it switches the organizational ladder, which people within the organization do not like to do.
But in spite of the fact that he did so well, they still added people to this organization to make it harder for him to get playing time. So what does that say about how the Phillies feel about him?
Yeah, that's certainly one way to take their offseason moves. They also seem to have some odd love affair with Carlos Santana, who I do like as a player. And they seem to trust Reese Hoskins in the outfield more than
a huge mistake.
There's a lot of prospect people who were stunned that he ever played the outfield last year, let alone that they're going to try and regularly trot him out there this year, which doesn't mean I don't believe in Hoskins, because I do. Anyway, Andrew, chime in on the debate.
So I'm not buying in on, like, as I feel like combining his AAA and his major league stats from last year is going to prove to be misleading. I would be surprised if he ever provides you with 27 home runs and 99 RBIs in a real major league baseball season. The speed looks like it's for real. So I'm willing to buy in on the 370-ish BABIP. That's probably high, but 350 seems a little bit more sensible. So the average is going to be there should the playing time be there. But as far as Nick Williams goes, yeah, the Phillies are they're riddled with this, right? Like, they've got all kinds of outfield prospects. They've got all kinds of money to spend next offseason. So, I mean, if he doesn't make it this year, is he ever going to make it if the Phillies are the team that goes and dumps, you know, backs up the Brink truck to Bryce Harper's door? You know, or he goes and gets somebody of that level that's going to take up a spot in this outfield. So I'm not in on Nick Williams. I just don't see it happening. And I mean, it's just not there for me. Like, the skills don't show it over time. He's never hit 20 home runs in the minors, which I know doesn't necessarily mean anything. But like, I think when we're looking at some of this growth, we know it's not linear. So we probably shouldn't expect it when we're drafting. And these guys either, like, I think you should be happy if you got 18 home runs and like 60 RBIs and 70 runs or something along that line from Nick Williams, and all of that's going to be below average. So why are you trying to get that into your roster?
Well, that's certainly a feasible question as well. I would try to argue that perhaps BABIP can get to the point where it's gotten so good for so long that it's a skill. And there are some.
Well, and I mean, guys who hit the ball hard, guys who've got speed, like, they can have these, you know, inflated BABIPs. I mean, is it going to be, was it like 378 last year or something like that in the major leagues? No, it's not going to be that. But he could definitely have a higher than normal BABIP. The issue with Nick Williams is he's hyper aggressive. I mean, he swung at over 59% of pitches last year. And for those who don't know, the major league average was 46.5. That's a huge, like he is swinging at everything. And that's going to cause problems, especially as pitchers adjust to him and find holes in that swing. And that's one why we saw the, you know, almost 30% strikeout rate last year, and why I would expect to see a much higher one this year. So I think there are obvious problems to Nick Williams's game or to his profile. A lot of it will depend on whether or not he can make in-season adjustments, and we just haven't seen that yet at the major league level.
Yeah, I mean, I think these are all good points. The other consideration here is that there's at least an outside chance that if the organization is as stacked as they appear to be in the outfield, if their minor leaguers are having good seasons, that maybe he gets moved somewhere where he gets a true shot by the end of the year, which doesn't matter in a lot of smaller leagues, but could really matter in like an NFBC league. If he turns out to be the starting left fielder for the last, you know, 50 games for the Padres or for the Royals or, you know, or the White Sox, well, then maybe he gets a chance to really show if he can sink or swim in less treacherous waters, if you will. All right, Justin, who's your first 24 concept player that you'd like to discuss?
All right, my guy's actually 26 years old, so this is a little bit older player, but there was no more hyped player, I think, last year than Jarrell Cotton. Like, everybody was on this kid. It was largely due to Eno Saris and Paul Sporer just talking this kid up coming into the season. He was absolutely atrocious in the major leagues. 129 innings of a 5.58 ERA with a 7.3 strikeout per nine. Gave up almost two home runs per nine in his 24 start sample at the major leagues. All right, so that was all the bad stuff. Here's the good stuff. He still has an amazing changeup. An amazing changeup. He still has a pretty good curveball and a pretty good fastball. He's got three decent pitches, well, two decent or plus pitches and a really plus pitch. There's no investment cost this year. Absolutely nothing. I think in AL labor last night, Eno got him for $4. And I would be willing in deeper formats to go back to the well, because he has the natural stuff, if he can stay healthy and keep his command in check, to be a top 40, top 45 starter in Major League Baseball and for fantasy. So I like Jarrell Cotton. I'm going to have some cheaper shares of him. And this year, unlike last year, there is no investment involved.
Yeah, I remember the hype train very well on Jarrell Cotton. Andrew, what are your thoughts on Cotton for this year?
I mean, at no cost, there's no reason to shy away. That's generally the way I think of it. If a guy's got the skill, you might as well go and get it. My only concern at this point is he going to be in the starting rotation to start the year? Roster resource currently doesn't have that, but I mean, that changes all the time, as there's lots of room for him, if he performs well, to take a spot from a Paul Blackburn or an Andrew Triggs. But yeah, I mean, he's done it in the minors. He had great caper nine in the minors, so there's some positive value being seen there. I mean, last year, you know, basically he's been over 11 in much of his time in the minors, so not that I expect him to do that in the majors, but if you saw that number, his caper nine creep up around 9, I don't think that would be that unforeseen. And I think it all comes down to, are the A's, you know, does he get the opportunity and is he going to take advantage of it? So at the age 26, he's getting probably pretty close to make it or break it time. So I would have to, you know, I think it's worth a flyer in late rounds.
Hi, before we,
Before we move on real quick, I just want to read our promo real quick. If you like betting, I have the deal for you. Eli Rosenfeld of Vertex Betting is one of the best in the business. Unlike many other betting information sites, he gives away all his information for free. There's no risk, no signups, no money needed to get the best betting insight in the business. Go out to vertexbetting.com and see why it beats all the other sites out there. And if you want to try out betting for the first time, click on the Bet Now link and sign up for MyBookie and or XBet with a $45 deposit. You will get a $50 rebate for Vertex Betting. Just tell Eli from Vertex that FWFB or Justin Mason sent you for a $50 rebate on a $45 deposit. Sorry for that interruption.
No problem. You know, as much as I enjoy working with you fellows, I would appreciate you helping me with one thing. I would like to rotate my soapboxes from year to year.
Mm.
And so within this show already, we've gotten the cordwood analysis, and now Justin has lobbed up an Oakland Athletic underperforming player for me. I'm going to very briefly touch on the fact that I do not trust the Oakland Athletic organization to develop solid sewer lines, let alone starting pitchers. And then I'm going to move to the fact that in this case, at least he was a Dodger prospect at one point. And this is the kind of player that I like to take late gambles on. Somebody that we know has the stuff that it's very easy to take the jump and say, if he's just a touch better in a few different areas, all of a sudden you have a usable pitcher that you can get really, really late. We know from doing these 15-team, 50-round drafts that we're in the middle of, that pitching just falls off the shelf, and it really feels like you're just taking stabs. You know, I recently took a stab on Matt Strom, who I just remember as...
Hey, that was the next guy on my list.
Awesome. I ran you right into this. This is good news. But the point being is that this is a guy who's, you know, these guys have stuff. There's no doubt about it, and they need to put some stuff together, some of the peripherals together, and the next thing you know, there is upside. And these are the kind of guys that I think you need to take late gambles on. I stay away from the, you know, the Clayton Richard types, these sort of retooled guys with limited upside. If you're going to swing for the fences, swing for the fences. And I like Jarrell Cotton as a name we talked about today, because that is swinging for, I mean, it's, we were talking about Bugs Bunny changeups is really how I've heard it referred to on multiple occasions, like a changeup that looks funky even to a guy like Marco Estrada, who has basically made his hay as a major league pitcher with the changeup. So I certainly understand as a post-type sleeper that Jarrell Cotton is a very interesting player, to say the least. Andrew, why don't we go to your second player?
Sure, I'll take the more interesting of the two, I think, and that's Anthony Alford, former top 100 prospect, got a sneeze, I suppose you could think of it, at the major leagues last year, as he only had about 10 at-bats, eight actually, before he got injured. But this is a guy who in the minors in previous years has been hitting around 300, known to be a great athlete. He's been consistently stealing about 18 bases a year. So there's a lot of thought that he could develop some more power. He's got the plate skills. Last year, he was around 12% walk and 15% strikeout. And with a Blue Jays organization where they've loaded up on outfielders right now, but I think by the trade deadline, should they run into trouble, you could find some room for a guy like Anthony Alford in your lineup, especially if he's going to provide you a 300 average and 20 stolen base potential.
Justin, this kind of is in your area of expertise. This is in your wheelhouse. Let's see what you got.
About Alford?
Correct.
I like Alford. I just, like, it doesn't seem like that the Blue Jays like their own outfield prospects. I mean, we've been waiting forever for Dalton Pompey to get a shot, and he never has. And so they went out of their way to acquire two new outfielders this offseason in Curtis Granison and Randall Grichuk. So it doesn't really bode well for Alford having a ton of value this season. That being said, if they decided to cut ties with Curtis Granderson and just, like, you know, give him the rest of his money to walk away, that wouldn't surprise me either. So I like Alfred as a player. I've liked him as a prospect. Completely post-hype, so I think he fits the bill here.
Well, I would say when it comes to Alfred, the one thing when I look at his profile is that he strikes out a lot for a guy without a lot of power. And that part really surprised me. Regular strikeout rates up over 20%. You know, historically, that's been something that you didn't look for in a sort of toolsy defender type of hitter, because he never had double-digit home runs at any stop in the minors yet to this point. I think the Blue Jays are one of those interesting teams that's in the middle, meaning that their season could go a lot of different ways this year. They're deep in pitching, but they're not especially strong in pitching. You know, they're not ace heavy by any means, although they are 3, 4, 5 type heavy. So that could go a number of different ways. This looks to be the last year that Josh Donaldson is going to be with the team. So that is a precarious situation. Justin Smoke, we're wondering if we're going to spell his name Smoke by the end of the year, or Smoak, because he finally tapped into some potential last year. And like Justin said, I mean, what is Randall Grichuk and what is Curtis Granderson anymore? We don't really know where they're at. And Troy Tulowitzki has never looked more like Plaster of Paris than he does right now. So there's a lot of issues on that team. And if he falls into playing time, we're going to find out if this 23-year-old is going to make a huge jump this year or if he is not. So he is an interesting player to keep in mind, and a deep league play or an AL-only league play this year, I think. You agree with those assessments, Andrew?
Yeah, I think actually – and the other thing to keep in mind is, should the Blue Jays fall out of love with Kevin Pillar or all of his – dives to make regular catches finally lead him into an injury, I think Alfred might be the next best guy up to roam center field at the Sky Dome. So that's a place where he could find himself into some value, as with Granderson's age, he's not necessarily a great guy to play center field, although they could also play bridge there. So I think there's a case to be made for Alfred seeing time this year if things break right.
Well, it's curious that Justin mentioned sort of outfield prospect fatigue within their own organization, because wasn't Anthony Gose was the one that I kept waiting to get regular playing time, their last center field prospect.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow or another that just didn't develop how we all thought it would at some point. So
yeah, he's now a pitcher.
Yeah, and Dalton Pompey, I mean, when you get called up that young, when's the last time a guy got called up that young and seemingly he has not gotten another chance? So I certainly understand all of the points that are being raised here about Anthony Alford. Certainly my second most intriguing player on my list is Ketel Marte, who is a guy that was largely given up upon as he shifted organizations from Seattle over to Arizona. Nick Ahmed is the kind of player that frustrates me the most in Major League Baseball, because I don't really understand what the point is in playing a glove-only player in this day of offensive production. And I feel like Ketel Marte did a lot, took a lot of steps forward last year. He is only 24 years old. He is very fast on the bases, which hasn't really translated to major league steals yet at this point. But he also hits a ton of line drives. His percentage rates look really good. He's an 11% walk rate. I mean, there is a lot of things to really like about Ketel Marte when you look at him. He's also garnered some attention this year as a guy who is a potential breakout on, these forums, elite forums, that are affiliated with our own Justin Mason. So what do you think about Ketel Marte as a breakout candidate this year, Andrew?
There's room to like that. For a player of his type where he runs really well, really encouraged by the 11% walk rate, really opens a lot of doors for that, for those stolen base totals. I guess I can understand why Nick Ahmed saw time in Arizona, as in previous years that haven't been overly competitive, and having a guy who can stay healthy and play shortstop and play around anywhere on the diamond has proven valuable for the Diamondbacks over the previous years, given Chris Owings' inability to stay healthy, the bust potential that continues to be out there, and Yosemite Tomas. I mean, they've really been riddled by injuries over time. So I would like to see Ketel Marte get regular playing time, and it looks like they're going to give it to him. And I think even if they were to send him down with Chris Owings' inability to stay healthy, there's lots of room there for him to find time again. And I think maybe, you know, for if you're the Diamondbacks, maybe you see Marte as kind of like a Gene Segura, maybe 1.5, because I don't think he's going to hit you necessarily the 20 home runs there now, especially with everyone's favorite humidor in place. But the steals, there's lots of room for steals there.
This, I think Justin's going to agree with me here, and he's about to shoot that down in flames. How do you feel about Ketel Marte this year, Justin?
I like Marte. I think I agree with Andrew that the humidor is probably going to hurt his chances of getting to double-digit home runs. But that's not necessarily why you draft him anyways. I think he's a guy who can hit 275 to 290, somewhere in that range, probably swat 5 to 7 home runs and steal 20-plus bags. And I don't see any reason why, after what he did in AAA and the majors last year, that they won't give him full-time playing time. It doesn't appear that Nick Ahmed or anybody else will be a huge impediment to that, so I like Ketel Marte a lot, actually.
Well, that's good to hear, and I think he fits the prospect fatigue thing, because you know he was definitely someone that people picked up when he got called up as a Mariner, and he was one of the string of Mariner infield prospects that probably couldn't have looked much worse than they did as Mariners. But a number of those people have gone off now and made slight impacts at a minimum, and I think Marte is one of those guys. How about you, Justin? Who's the second most intriguing guy? Do we get to talk about Matt Strom, or are we going to go to a different?
You know, I mentioned Matt Strom before, and I do find him really intriguing. He is coming off an injury right now and probably will miss a little time this season. So I'm going to go over to another guy who missed all of last season because of an injury. But Charlie Tilson was the talk of the town for a little while in fantasy. People really thought they would get a top-of-the-order bat that could steal some bases. I believe he killed it in Arizona Fall League the previous season, and people were really excited about him. He stole 46 bases in 2015 with the Cardinals organization. In about 100 games the following season, he stole 15 bases. So far, Roster Resource has him penciled in to lead off for the White Sox this year and play center field. I don't know if necessarily that will be a full-time position or if he'll end up platooning, but I think this is a guy that could easily steal 15 to 20 bases this year, and if for some reason he does get a full slate of plate appearances at the top of the order, you're talking about a guy who has the potential to steal 30-plus. So I like Charlie Tilson in really deep formats, and nobody is talking about him.
Andrew, how do you feel about Charlie Tilson?
I agree with what Justin said. There's no, I mean, you look at the numbers, it was like he had 15 steals in 100 games, 395 plate appearances in AAA in 2016. Injured all last year. I think his competition in center field is
Willie Garcia.
Is it Willie Garcia? Is it Adam Engel?
Adam Engel too. Adam Engel's more of a Adam Engel, another guy I really like as a deep sleeper, though not post hype because there really wasn't any hype.
But is also extremely fragile based on his past. There's no reason at Charlie Tilson's cost that, I mean, everyone, I can't think of anyone whose team in the last couple rounds isn't going to still be in need of speed unless you've managed to accumulate a lot of steals earlier in your draft. So taking 15 or getting 15, 20 steals that late, even if it comes at a 250 batting average, which, you know, his past doesn't show, but I think there's lots of reasons to be buying in on Charlie Tilson.
I think you're looking at a guy who's going to go 35, 40 picks after Leonis Martin, was all but forgotten. So I think there's an incredible buying opportunity. I like to call it the Travis Jankowski effect, because now that we basically have no reason to remember who Jankowski was, the real reason that he got locked into his heavy stolen base season was playing time, was service time concerns. Like, the Padres didn't have anyone else that they wanted to call up, and they were obviously weren't going anywhere. So just keep running them out there and keep running them while you're running them out there. And that is the opportunity that you see in guys like Leonis Martin and a guy like Charlie Tilson. I remember being stunned about hearing his name and seeing him on roster resource, expected to be the everyday center fielder going into last year before he got hurt. So there's very little investment cost here, and the upside in categorical value by season's end is very, very significant. So there's not that much to dislike about Charlie Tilson, because that White Sox team is not ready to compete yet this year, to say the least, especially on the bump.
I agree. And but the nice thing for these AL Central teams is that, like, neither is the Royals and neither are the Tigers. Mm-hmm. So it's not, if they're on their own and they're facing like four juggernauts, it's like you could take Charlie Tilson and you could probably sit him against his games against the Indians. But otherwise, he's largely going to be facing subpar starting pitching.
Yeah, I was about to say, because the Twins pitching staff isn't ready to compete either.
Yeah, that's true too. The at risk of me, you know, not breaking into the Sanford and Son song, I've been a guy long term who has preached that you need to go to these really bad teams and try to mine some value out of them, because these teams are not going to come to mind as teams that you really want to stock up on players from. But they're still going to have to put in a full lineup for each game. They're still going to score runs against bad relievers. If they get down by 7 or 8 runs in a lot of these games, they're going to face the worst pitching that Major League Baseball has to offer during mop-up time. And there's no clause in any category in fantasy baseball that says, oh, well, you don't get as many points as you think you get because they didn't come against quality pitching. So I think you're going to see a lot of these teams, as we go to a major shift to rebuilding major league teams, you're going to see guys jump out of nowhere. The Nicky Delmonico's on the White Sox, the, you know, like I said, the Travis Jankowski year. You're going to see years like this, and they're going to change the results in your fantasy baseball leagues. And so I think it's very crucial to pay attention to these rosters and where these rosters are going, because you can get some significant value from them that at first glance you're not going to even think about. So I think that's a very valid point. Well, this was our Age 24 concept podcast, and we had the special privilege of having Justin Mason. We've recently learned that we will regularly get Matt Thompson, semi-regularly get Matt Thompson on this podcast as well. Justin, why don't you, since we're on sort of, we have limited time, give us at least like 20% of the stuff you're working on right now, and your Twitter moniker, and we'll move over to Andrew after that.
Why don't we start by mentioning the fact that Friends of Fantasy Benefits put out a draft guide, and all three of us wrote stuff for that. You can find it on Amazon. It is called The Fantasy Benefit. If you type The Fantasy Benefit into Amazon, you will find it. I believe a ebook is $4.99, a paperback is $13.99, or if you just like a PDF, you can email me, justinmasonfantasy@gmail.com. And I will send you a PDF for $4. You can find me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Read all my stuff, Fangraphs, Fantasy Alarm, Fantrax, Fantasy Sports Radio Network for radio, Sleeper on the Bust, this podcast. Yeah, all that good stuff. So, and the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational. Oh, my God. That's going on right now. So, like, go check out at TG... let's see, the Great Fantasy TGFBI on Twitter for all the information. 15 team leagues, 13 of them going on, 195 industry analysts, and both you guys are in that one as well. So yeah, go check that out.
And Andrew, how about you, my friend? How's the hockey season developing?
Hockey season is starting to come to a close. I think we're down to the last 4 weeks in Roto, so you're in well into playoff time for head-to-head. Weekly articles coming out on that. Fell behind last week with having both the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational startup, and I'm representing Friends with Fantasy Benefits in the Battle of the Podcast League. So those drafts ended up taking up more time than I should have let them, but... that being said, you'll probably get one or two this week, and still trying to get out fancy hockey podcasts on a weekly or bi-weekly basis, so you can keep an eye out for those, as well as you'll start to see more baseball content coming from me in the near future.
Andrew, the fact that you are multi-sport, you can do the hockey, the football, and baseball, etc. The fact that you can do all that is very impressive to me, because I'm pretty sports centric. I am generally just a baseball guy. I am Chuck Anderson. I can be reached at Just Chucking It. The staff at FWFB invites me into their fantasy football leagues just so they can laugh at me, which is okay. It is laugh worthy. I agree with them. This was a very fun endeavor. I don't think it went exactly the ways that everyone thought it was going to, and that's part of the fun. So, signing off for Friends with Fantasy Benefits. Don't forget about the draft guide. Mine is on the way via mail right now. Don't forget about the draft guide, and we will keep providing the premium fantasy baseball content all the way through the drafting season and all the way through the Major League Baseball season for us. Our pleasure having you guys as listeners. Thanks for everything. We'll go from there.